Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janavalava Girivarada Hari
Gopi Janavalava
Jayo Gopi Janavalava Girivarada Hari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jaya Shripal Paramahamsa Parujaja Kacharya Chatrashata Shishmad A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Jai Vishnupad Paramahansa Parvayajakacharya Shatrashna Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaja Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Shri Hari Astakur Ki Jai Iskon Bibhuti Founder Acharya His Living Grace Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Prem Sikho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shishi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindam Dham Ki Jai Mayapudam Ki Jai Gangamai Munamai Ki Jai Tulasi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Shri Harinam Sankirtan Yagya Ki Jai Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol All Gaurisam Devotees All Gaurisam Devotees All Gaurisam Devotees All Gauris All Gauris Shishi Guru and Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
So we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, Text Number 3. Katayasva Mahabhagam Katayasva Mahabhagam Yathaham Akhilatmani Yadhaham Akhilatmani. Krishne Niveshya Nishangam. Krishne Niveshya Nishangam. Manasyakshe Kalevaram. Manasyakshe Kalevaram. Katayasva Mahabhagam. Yataham Akhilatmani. Krishne Niveshya Nishangam. Manasyakshe Kalevaram. Please chant. Katayasvam. Please continue speaking. Mahabhagam. O greatly fortunate one. Yadam. As much as. Aham. I. Akila Atmani. Unto the Supreme Soul. Krishna, unto Lord Shri Krishna, Niveshyam, having placed, Nishangam, being freed from material qualities, Manam, mind, Tyakshem, may relinquish. Kalevaram, body. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O greatly fortunate Shukadeva Goswami, please continue narrating Srimad Bhagavatam so that I can place my mind upon the Supreme Soul, Lord Krishna, and being completely freed from material qualities, thus relinquish this body. Purport. To be fully engaged in hearing the transcendental narration described in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam means to constantly associate with the Supreme Soul, Sri Krishna. And to constantly associate with the Supreme Lord Krishna means to be liberated from the qualities of matter. Lord Krishna is like the sun, and material contamination is like darkness. As the presence of the sun dissipates darkness, constant engagement in the association of the Lord Sri Krishna frees one from the contamination of material qualities. Contamination by the material qualities is the cause of repeated birth and death, and liberation from material qualities is transcendence. Maharaj Parikshit was now a realized soul. By this secret of liberation, through the grace of Shukadeva Goswami, for the latter had informed the king that the highest perfection of life is to be in remembrance of Narayan at the end of life. Maharaj Parikshit was destined to give up his body at the end of 7 days, and thus he decided to continue remembering the Lord by his association with the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, and thus to quit his body in full consciousness of the presence of the Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Soul. The hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam performed by professional men is different from the transcendental hearing of Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit was a soul realized in the absolute truth, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The fruitive materialist is not a realized soul. He wants to derive some material benefit from his so-called hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam. Undoubtedly, such an audience hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from the professional men can derive some material benefit as they desire, but that does not mean that such a pretense of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam for a week is as good as the hearing of Maharaj Parikshit. It is the duty of the saint to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from a self-realized soul and not to be duped by professional men. One should continue such hearing till the end of one's life so that one can actually have the transcendental association of the Lord and thus be liberated simply by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Maharaj Parikshit had already given up all his connections with his kingdom and family, the most attractive features of materialism. But still he was conscious of his material body. He wanted to be free of such bondage also by the constant association of the Lord.
Kataya Swamahabhaga Yataham Akilatmani Krishne Nivesya Nishangam Manas Yakshe Kalevaram Om Agyanati Miranjasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmulitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Vancha kalpatrubhyacha kripasinubhyacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. So we have a beautiful verse this morning, and this is the continuation of basically inquiries that Maharaj Parikshit is placing in front of his spiritual master. In this example, we find two great souls, and they're both very exalted devotees, extremely qualified. However, one of them is taking position of disciple and the other position of a spiritual master. And their dialogue is so beneficial for all of us. It's beneficial for all the living entities in the universe. And essentially, we are finding perfect questions and perfect answers.
Sometimes we even wonder what to inquire. But here, actually, we have perfect questions and perfect answers. So Maharaj Parikshit is saying to Shukadev, he's saying, he's actually addressing him as Mahabhaga, greatly fortunate one. And then he's saying, Kata Yasva, please continue speaking. So that is essentially what devotees do. As the famous verse in Gita says, Machitta madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam katayanta shimam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. So the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are surrendered to me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss by enlightening one another and conversing about me. So Krishna is saying, my devotees derive great satisfaction simply by conversing about me. So as our Christian brothers and sisters would say, humans cannot live on bread alone. They also need words. It's a very interesting statement. I like it very much. And what kind of words? Specifically words about Krishna and his pastimes. So just imagine a small child, if parents would not talk to that child. How would that child develop? Not very good. So similarly, without the information about the Supreme Soul, about Krishna, the living entity cannot fully develop, and therefore it is essential that we hear continuously. As Srila Prabhupada is saying, basically one should go on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam throughout entire life. And what would be the result, we may ask? So some of us are been doing it for, you know, a few years, and most of you senior devotees have been doing it for much longer. And you can see the result is very, very much self-evident. There is a change. There is definitely change in our consciousness. And as Krishna is saying in Gita, Anta kale cha mam eva smaram muktva kalevaram ya prayati sammad bhavam yati nasti atra samshaya. So Krishna is saying, and whoever at the end of his life quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. And then Krishna says something really interesting. He says, of this there is no doubt. Of this there is no doubt. So if Krishna is saying there is no doubt, then what more assurance we need? So in the case of Maharaj Parikshit, we find that his unique quality is that his objective is very clear. His goal is very clear. He understands that he only has a limited number of days, and therefore he is inquiring from his spiritual master, what is the best thing to do? What is the best thing to perform in these final moments? Sometimes we get distracted with so many things in our daily activities, and in the modern age there is no lack of distractions through so many different means and ways. But in the final moments, our objective should be very clear. Recently I saw one video, basically, as we all know, very tragic event happening in Turkey with the earthquake. And I was watching a small video, basically there was a reporter showing the basically there was initial earthquake and there was aftershocks after that. So you can see in the video, basically the building is kind of damaged from the first earthquake, and it's kind of tilted. And basically within about 3 seconds, the entire building collapses. I remember as a kid, we would build kind of like small structures with the carts. But as soon as you make one mistake or there's a wind, the entire project would collapse. So sadly enough, there were people inside. But what actually caught my attention was not the building, although that was very dramatic to see. What caught my attention is actually right next to the man with the camera, there was a man and he was chanting loudly, "Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, the God is great." So I was thinking, this is the best thing to do, because this man, he realized there is no other shelter. There is nobody that can help him. Government, no. His family, he doesn't even know where they are. His own strength, he cannot stop the building from tumbling over. So in the final moments, we realize there is no other shelter than Krishna. And our objective becomes very, very clear. And that is exactly what we see in the example of Maharaj Parikshit. So, now to kind of focus our objective, it is very helpful to understand there's two very prominent concepts in our scriptures, and Prabhupada talks about them very often, very frequently. And we heard basically Shreyas and Prayas. So what exactly that Prabhupada is trying to tell us? Shreyas means ultimate benefit. Long-term goal, long-term benefit. And prayas means kind of like more immediate satisfaction. So there was a beautiful class that Prabhupada gave in London back in 1973. And it was a class on the verse from Gita, from first chapter of Gita, actually. Nacha shreyo nupashyami hatvas vajnanam mahave nakankshe vijnanam krishna nacha rajam sukhani cha. So this is Arjuna speaking, and he's saying, I do not see how any good can come from killing my own kinsmen in this battle, nor can I, my dear Krishna, desire any subsequent victory, kingdom, or happiness. And then Prabhupada is commenting on this verse. He's saying, so there are two things, Shreyas and Prayas. Here Arjuna is speaking of Shreyas. Shreyas means ultimate good, and Prayas means immediately palatable. That is called Prayas. So everyone should be interested in Shreyas, not for prayers. Just like a child, he likes to play all day and night, naturally, playful child. So that is called prayers. He likes immediate pleasure. But his father says, my dear child, just go to school or read a book. So father is asking for Shreyas, ultimate good. If he is not educated at the school, at the childhood, then how he will prosper in his future life. So considering the future prospect, ultimate good, that is called Shreyas. And Prayas means immediate. So, with that kind of approach, we can much easier actually filter our consciousness to things that really matter, things that are essential. Recently also I was reading a beautiful article by Satchinandana Swami. And one thing, if you know Maharaj, he loves to go into the caves and chant in the caves. I remember back in 2015, a group of devotees, we went with Maharaj deep into one cave in southern Europe. And the cave itself is pretty much about 370 meters long, so it's about 1,200 feet. And when you go deep in the ground, essentially the temperature drops because it's so far underneath the surface of the earth. And essentially we were chanting, doing kirtan, and at one point Maharaj said, imagine that this is your last round of japa. How would you chant? With what kind of focus, with what kind of emotion in your heart? So it made me really think, if we could chant with that with such consciousness every day, it would be wonderful. So Maharaj is saying, heart is like a mirror, and anything good or bad that goes through our mind is reflected within our heart. But unlike the mirror in which impressions quickly disappear, those things do stay in our heart. And very often in the modern times, a lot of negativity and a lot of stress stay in the heart like dust covering the soul. One of the most important teachings in the tradition of bhakti is that you can choose what you wish to put into your heart. If you cleanse the mirror of the heart by constant hearing about the Lord, you will install in your heart the divine couple Radha and Krishna. And if you keep on thinking, meditating about them, they will stay within your heart, and the inner darkness, which is often so difficult to overcome, will be dispelled once and forever. So, just after Lord Krishna killed Kamsa, basically the two wives of Kamsa, Asti and Prapti, they had to go back to their father. In the Vedic culture, we find that the ladies, they're always protected. In the childhood, they are protected by the father, in the youth, by husband, and later on, in a later stage of life, by the grown-up sons. But in the case of Kamsa's wives, essentially it appears that they did not have any sons. So after Kamsa's death, they had to go back to their father. And do you know who the father is? Jarasandha. Yes, thank you, Madhumati. So when they came back to Jarasandha, he was horrified. You know, in the Vedic culture, I mean, in any times, the father always wants the daughter to be protected, married, and be happy. So can you imagine, you know, especially in those days, those two daughters, they come back under his shelter. And so Jarasandha is extremely upset. And he wants to destroy entire Yadu dynasty. So he assembles his huge army and he makes plan to attack Mathura. And seeing that threat, Krishna basically, he just, you know, started analyzing and thinking, and immediately two chariots appeared. And he said, "My dear brother Balaram, we came to this world to free the world from the demoniac forces. So this is a great opportunity. Please take this chariot and you know, let us kill all these demons." So, to make a story a little bit more condensed, essentially all the soldiers, which initially were 13 divisions, you know, thousands of elephants, horses, and soldiers, basically they were all killed. Prabhupada described it so much in the details. Essentially, there was almost like a river of blood going on. And of course, when it's related to Krishna, it's all wonderful. So, foolish Jarasandha, as we know, he not only tried once, but he actually attempted 17 times. And each time he was defeated, all his soldiers were killed. But Krishna make a special treatment for him. And basically, they did not want to kill him, but they would rather arrest him. And he was humiliated, and then he was released. So after all these attempts, basically 18 times, he basically assembled huge army. However, this time, pretty much at the same time, there was another threat posing to Mathura and to Yadus. It's described that south of Mathura, there was a king named Kalyavana. And this rascal, he actually heard from Narada Muni about Krishna. And he was inquiring, who are the most powerful kings in the world? And he wanted to battle with them. And Narada, he described beautiful, features of Lord and his opulence. So this foolish demon, he was actually thinking, I'm going to destroy the Yadus and I'm going to take their wealth. So this crazy demon, he brought also a huge army. Do you know how many soldiers? 33 million soldiers. I was actually, being number guy, I like to compare things. So I was actually curious what is the average population of state of Florida? And it basically, the statistics say that it's about 25 million. So imagine entire state of Florida, actually more than that, coming to attack Krishna and Balaram. So that just tells us how crazy this demon was. Anyhow, Krishna, he realized now there is a double threat. On one side, Jarasandha, on the other side, Kalyavana. And as we know, basically, Krishna decides to take all his family members and Taryadu dynasty, and he created fort, which is Dwaraka. Vishwakarma created amazing, beautiful city. And it's described Krishna built huge walls, which were about 96 square miles. And within those walls, he placed his dear friends, family members, and King Virasena, and he entrusted entire city to Lord Balaram. And after everything was secured, then Krishna walked out of the city gates. So Kalyavana was already there with all his entire army surrounding basically entire city. And the interesting thing to note is Krishna, he came out with a beautiful garland, smiling, no weapons in his hands. So Krishna is so wonderful. And he just walked by. And this foolish demon, he's looking like, hey, I'm here to fight. But Krishna, he just walked by and, you know, smiling, almost not noticing Kalyavana. And now, being that, you know, Kalyavana was informed by Narada about the beautiful features of the Lord, he noticed, you know, Shivatsamar, Kaustubha jewel on Lord's chest. So he realized, and this personality was so beautiful, so he actually realized this must be Krishna. But he still, you know, due to his envy and due to his greed for material opulence, he was just there to fight. Anyhow, he started running faster and faster, and Krishna was just walking. And no matter how fast he was running, he couldn't catch the Lord. So it's described that one who is not following the Vedic principles, one who is not purified in heart, there's no chance of catching Krishna. There's no chance. It's impossible. So no matter how fast this foolish demon was running, he could never reach Krishna. So finally, Krishna arrived to one cave. And when he entered, he disappeared. And when Kalyavana walked in, he saw the man sleeping on the ground. And being all, you know, puffed up and, you know, arrogant, he thought like, aha, just see, he's hiding here. So he kicked the sleeping person with his foot, not realizing actually who that is. And in that moment, that individual, he got up and he opened his eyes, and the blaze of fire came out and burned Kalyavana to ashes. So upon hearing this story, Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Shukadev, and he said, who was that sleeping individual? And why was he lying in the cave? And then Shukadeva Goswami goes on to explain that this personality that was so powerful, he was actually a great devotee of the Lord, King Muchukunda. And since we are running out of time, I'm going to try to summarize this beautiful pastime. So basically, the story goes on. Then Krishna appeared in his four-armed form, and King Muchukunda, he offered his obeisances, and then he inquired humbly from the Lord, who are you? My dear Lord, I see all the darkness in this cave is dissipated by your beautiful effulgence. And, but how did you come here? Muchukunda is inquiring. I see your lotus feet are so soft, like lotus petals. And you're walking in this, you know, in this cave. And you can see, like, there was a sentiment of care and love in his expression. So the story goes on. King Muchukunda explained first, you know, who he was. And essentially, he was a great king, coming in the line of King Ikshvaku, and that's the same lineage where Lord Ramachandra appeared. And he was so pious and so powerful that demigods, they invited him to fight for them. And after fighting for so many thousands of years, essentially when his time to retire came, he obtained the blessing from Kartikeya, and he only asked to rest, because he was so exhausted. So Kartikeya gave him blessings to sleep, and if anybody disturbs him, he had the power to burn him to ashes. Anyhow, the story goes on. But the reason I'm mentioning this story, you remember what we were talking earlier? Kalyavana came with how many soldiers? 33 million soldiers. So what do you think they're doing? They're still outside. But the interesting thing to note here, in the midst of all these you know, apparent chaos, what is Krishna doing? Krishna is thinking, there is my devotee. There is my devotee in the cave. And he wants to liberate the devotee. So just imagine how amazing the Lord is. He never forgets any of his devotees. He never forgets any service done by any of them. So I thought that was amazing. Like, you know, there's like war going on. There's like huge armies. But Krishna is thinking, there is my devotee in a cave. I'm going to visit him. That is his priority. Anyhow, it's a beautiful story. I'm sure you all heard it. But to summarize, basically, after the beautiful exchange between King Muchikunda and the Lord, essentially, Krishna gives him blessings, realizing that his heart is so pure, because when he offered him boon, Muchikunda did not ask for any material boon. He just prayed for devotional service. So, after that, Muchikunda left. He comes out to the cave. He realizes people were much smaller than he remembered because so much time passed. And he realized the age of Kali has arrived. And as the story explains, Muchikunda, he goes to Badarikashram and spends the rest of his life there perfecting his life. And then Krishna, he resumes his, you know, so-called daily duties of, you know, battling the demons. And another interesting point, as we know, Krishna becomes known as Rancho, one who ran away, apparently ran away. But this time he doesn't, because, you know, there is now soldiers of Kalyavana, there is also soldiers of Jarasandha. So he doesn't fight with Jarasandha either. He actually, you know, walks away from the battle. And interesting reason, do you know why he did that? Why, Madhumi? You know everything. So, basically, it's explained that Krishna had another important matter to attend. And what that matter was, there was a letter from Rukmini. There was a letter from Rukmini. So he wanted to kidnap Rukmini. He didn't want to waste time with Jarasandha. So anyhow, we can see from these beautiful stories, Krishna's activities are so wonderful that there is no reason not to be absorbed in them. I mean, they are so attractive that any sane person, as Prabhupada is saying in the purport, would actually naturally gravitate to hear about the Lord and to remember him and meditate on his wonderful pastimes. So at the end, I would like to read a beautiful quote I read from Sachinandan Swami. And this kind of summarizes, in a nutshell, everything we spoke. So I'm going to leave you with this. This is a little quote that he actually found in one of the medieval monasteries. Maharaj likes to travel and discover some hidden treasures. And it goes like this. Stop! Where are you running? Everything you seek lies inside. Soul, God, happiness, and joy. You might miss it all if you keep searching outside. And then Maharaj goes on to explain. Please consider that the most essential things in life are invisible. Breath, life force, love, soul, and God. All can be seen with our present eyes, nor touched with our hands. Nevertheless, they are what matters most. Without them, all the things we surround ourselves are like a big meal without salt, or body without life, simply tasteless and dead, soon to slip out of our hands. How can we access these invisible treasures? One answer that the wisdom text provides is go inside, unclutter, become still. Then you will hear that unerring voice that will direct you to your real wealth, but only if you ask. Know that behind the businesses of our human arrangements and concepts, there are forces at work that are much stronger and more decisive than everything we have come up with. It is necessary to contact these higher arrangements to find out what the greater plan for us is. As I once wrote, only when the heart becomes still can the voice of the soul and God be heard. But if the noise of the mind and the external world occupy us, we will be distracted from the path leading to our inner fortune. So move into the secret space of the heart, still your mind, and learn to listen. And learn to listen. Beautiful. Thank you so much. I'm going to stop here. If anybody would like to make any comments, ask any questions, any critiques, all is welcome. Yes, Mother Sukhara.
Thank you so much for a wonderful, entertaining, thoughtful, meaningful class. And what I took away from it really was the point that it seemed like you were really driving home is just Krishna's love for his devotee and rescuing him in all different kinds of situations, regardless of what it looks like externally. He's running away from the battlefield or whatever, he had to go get Rukmini. So just realizing that each one of us, because of whatever service that we render, that also Krishna finds us somehow very dear, and that he would be willing also to rescue us if we just depend on him. So thank you for that very poignant reminder.
Thank you. Thank you.
As this whole class is about this personal relationship, I was reading Prabhupada's book, and all of a sudden there was this disciple who went to Srila Prabhupada, and he was saying that he was speaking to Krishna, and Prabhupada answered, "Who do you think you are that you can think that you can speak directly to Krishna?" And then I got so sad about hearing this, because I was thinking, if you can't speak to Krishna, how can he be a person to you? And I was so sad, I didn't know what to think about this sentence.
I can share your feelings, and now it's important to go a little bit deeper. Why Prabhupada would say that? On one hand, Prabhupada did not want us to prematurely kind of like jump to the, or artificially assume that we can, you know, be something that we may not be in our initial stages of our devotional life. But at the same time, there's many examples where Prabhupada actually does encourage devotee having direct exchange with the Lord. Now, it is not something that, you know, we would now kind of like publicly present, oh, I'm, you know, speaking to the Lord. But of course, in our prayers, in our meditation, in our daily sadhana, of course, there is no reason not to address the Lord directly. I mean, after all, we are personalists. So it's important to understand what was the intention of Srila Prabhupada. His intention was not to discourage us from trying to have the personal feelings and personal exchange with the Lord. No, that was not his intention, so don't be discouraged. His intention was to essentially eliminate any possibility and caution us, especially those who may be artificially trying to basically approach the Lord and not follow the process correctly. I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly. Yes.
So as I hear you, there is this danger of becoming a sahajya.
Exactly.
And I do understand that only very, very great devotees speak to Krishna like that, directly. So then my next question is how to avoid becoming a sahajya.
Well, the process that was presented by Srila Prabhupada is like, I think Pushkar Prabhu was reading that verse a couple of days ago. And in the purport, Prabhupada is explaining basically, we want to present Srimad Bhagavatam as a science. It's not something that should be approached in a sentimental way, like Prabhupada is even in this purpose, you know, at one point saying, don't be duped by the professional speakers. And essentially, those are people who are, they speak Bhagavatam for 7 days, but their motivation is different. They're doing it to, I don't know, I mean, not so much in the West, but in India, I'm sure it's still happening. It's kind of like occupation for them. So it's not necessarily done out of devotion. So Prabhupada is saying, our aim is to present Krishna consciousness in a scientific way. And if we follow the process correctly, if we apply the medicine correctly, which is hearing, chanting, following the regulative principles, that will ensure that we don't become sahajiyas. That will ensure that our consciousness and our heart will be purified. And definitely, rest assured, there will be times when we will come to that level where we will interact directly with the Lord. So, on one side, spiritual master cautions the disciple, and on the other hand, he also encourages the disciple to follow correctly and faithfully. And as Krishna is saying in the verses that we read earlier, there is no doubt that you will achieve success. There is no doubt. Krishna is assuring us of that. Anybody else like to say something? If not, we will stop here. Garantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.